And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's September 23rd, 266th day of the year. 99 days remain till the year's over with. For those who follow the news, the border incursion by everybody and their dog from around the world is getting worse while Emperor Joe Biden sits and looks at it and Kamala Harris says we're not doing enough. Well, on this day in the year 38, Drusilla, Caligula's sister, who died in June, is deified. Now, it's sad that the Emperor Caligula had an incestual relationship with her. She's supposedly beautiful. And Caligula, who was the third Roman emperor, also formerly known as Gaius Caesar Augustus Germanicus, he ruled from 37 to 41. He was the son of the popular Roman general Germanicus and Augustus's granddaughter, Agrippina the Elder, born into what you might call the first ruling family of the Roman Empire. His Germanicus's uncle and adoptive father, Tiberius, succeeded Augustus as emperor of Rome in AD 14. And although Gaius is named after Gaius Julius Caesar, he got the nickname Caligula, which means little boot, from his father's soldiers during their campaign in Germania. Well, in the year 41, he was assassinated as a result of conspiracy by officers of the Praetorian Guard, senators, and courtiers. This was an attempt to use the opportunity to restore the Roman Republic. Unfortunately for them, it was thwarted. On the day of the assassination of Caligula, the Praetorians declared Caligula's uncle Claudius the next Roman emperor. And although the Julio-Claudian dynasty continued to rule the empire until the fall of his nephew Nero in the year 68, Caligula's death marked the official end of the Julius Caesareans in the male line. In fact, that line was almost stamped out. Well, in 1122, Pope Calixtus II and Holy Roman Emperor Henry V agree on the Concordat of Worms to put an end to the investiture controversy. Now, the investiture controversy was also called the investiture contest. It was a conflict between the church and the state in medieval Europe over the ability to choose and install bishops, which was called investiture, and abbots of monasteries and of the Pope himself. Now, a series of popes in the 11th and 12th century undercut the power of the Holy Roman Emperor and other European monarchies, and that controversy led to almost 50 years of civil war in Germany. Eventually, it was brought to an end. You got to the point where the Pope had to approve somebody becoming king. 1338, the Battle of Ernemuiden, in which a French force defeats the English, is the first naval battle of the Hundred Years' War, and the first naval battle in which gunpowder artillery was used. 1409, the Battle of Kurland, is the second significant victory over Ming Dynasty China by the Mongols since 1368. 1459, the Battle of Bloor Heath, the first major battle of the English Wars of the Roses, won by the Yorkists. 1561, King Philip II of Spain issues cedula, ordering a halt to colonizing efforts in Florida. If that wasn't done, everybody in Florida might be speaking Spanish as their primary language. 1641, the Merchant Royal, carrying a treasure of over 100,000 pounds of gold, which is worth over $1 billion today, is lost at sea off Land's End. Nobody has a clue what happened to it. 1642, the first commencement exercises occur at Harvard College. 1779, the American Revolution. John Paul Jones, naval commander of the United States on board the USS Bahamut Richard, wins the Battle of Flamborough Head. 1780, American Revolution. British Major John Andre is arrested as a spy by American soldiers, exposing Benedict Arnold's change of sides. In 1803, the Second Anglo-Maratha War, the Battle of Lasai is fought between the British East India Company and the Maratha Empire in India. 1806, Lewis and Clark come back to St. Louis after exploring the Pacific Northwest of the United States. 1821, Tripolitsa, Greece, is captured by Greek rebels during the Greek War of Independence. 1845, the Knickerbockers Baseball Club, the first baseball team to play under the modern rules, is founded in New York. 1846, astronomers Urbain Le Verrier, John Couch Adams, and Johann Gottfried Galle collaborate on the discovery of Neptune. 1868, Grito de Lares, the Lares Revolt, occurs in Puerto Rico against Spanish rule. 1884, on the night of 23 to 24 September, steamship Arctic runs aground near Cape Virginia's, leading to the discovery of nearby Placer Gold, the beginning of the Tierra del Fuego gold rush. 1889, Nintendo Capai, the later called the Nintendo Company Limited, was founded by Fusahiro Yamauchi to produce and market the playing card game Hanafuda. 1899, the American Asiatic Squadron destroys a Filipino battery at the Battle of Olongapo. 1905, Norway and Sweden signed the Karlstadt Treaty, peacefully dissolving the union between the two countries. 1911, pilot Earl Ovington makes the first official airmail delivery in America under the authority of the United States Post Office Department. 1913, Roland Garros of France becomes the first to fly in an airplane across the Mediterranean. He went from San Rafael in France to Bizerte in Tunisia. 1932, the unification of Saudi Arabia is complete. 1938, the Czechoslovakian army is mobilized in response to the Munich Agreement. 1942, World War II, the Mantanacal action on Guadalcanal begins. U.S. Marines attack Japanese units along the Mantanacal River. 1943, World War II, the Nazi puppet state known as the Italian Social Republic is founded. It's popularly and historically known as the Republic of Salo. It was a German puppet state with limited recognition, was created during the latter part of World War II. It existed from the beginning of the German occupation of Italy in September 43 until the surrender of German troops in Italy in May of 45. During their civil war, which split the country in two, it fought against the Italian resistance. It was the second and last incarnation of the Italian fascist state and was led by Il Duce, Benito Mussolini, and his reformed anti-monarchist Republican Fascist Party. It declared Rome its capital, was de facto centered on Salò, a small town on Lake Garda near Brescia, where Mussolini and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs was headquartered. It had nominal sovereignty in northern and central Italy, largely dependent on German troops to maintain control. The Italian army did not have a sterling reputation, I might say. 1950, Korean War. The Battle of Hill 282 is the first U.S. friendly fire incident on British military personnel since World War II. 1962, the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts opens in New York City. 1973, the Argentine general election. Juan Perón returned to power in Argentina. 1983, St. Kitts and Nevis join the United Nations. 1983, Gulf Air Flight 771 is destroyed by a bomb, killing all 117 people on board. 1986, Houston Astros' Jim Deshays sets a record, striking out the first eight batters he faces against the Los Angeles Dodgers. 2002, the first public version of the web browser Mozilla Firefox, also known as Phoenix 0.1, is released. 2004, over 3,000 people die in Haiti after Hurricane Jeanne produces massive flooding and mudslides. 2008, Matti Saari kills 10 people at a school in Finland before committing suicide. 2019, the British travel company Thomas Cook Group declares bankruptcy, literally overnight, leaving employees without jobs and 600,000 customers stranded abroad. Hotels throughout the world are struck with £338 million in unpaid bills. That's about $415 million. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Adamnan, Sis of Crowland, Blessed Emily Gamelin, Padre Pio, Pope Linus, Celsius, Tecla in the Roman Catholic Church, Xantippe and Polizina, Grito de Lares, or in Puerto Rico, Holocaust Memorial Day in Lithuania, Kyrgyz Language Day in Kyrgyzstan, National Day in Saudi Arabia, in Brunei, it's Teacher's Day. In the bisexual community, it's Celebrate Bisexuality Day. And it's International Day of Sign Language. Let's see what else we might have. In 1951, Otto the First the Great becomes King of Italy. In 1408, the Battle of Authie, the victory of John the Fearless, Duke of Burgundy, over Liege. In 1513, King Henry III and the Emperor Maximilian conquered Dornick. In 1779, I mentioned John Paul Jones, on board the USS Bonhomme Richard, defeats the British frigate HMS Seraphis and becomes the United States' first well-known naval hero. He's known for telling the enemy commander, "I've not yet begun to fight." In 1818, border demarcation markets for Moresnet formally installed. 1821, the fall of Tripolitsa. Greek forces massacred 30,000 Turks during this battle in the Greek War of Independence. 1857, the Russian warship, the Fort, disappears in a storm in the Gulf of Finland. 826 people die. 1862, on this date, Otto von Bismarck, German statesman, is appointed Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Prussia by King Wilhelm I. 1863, this was the day the Confederate siege of Chattanooga began. In 1879, a Baldwin Steam Motors tram is first tried in Sydney, Australia. 1879, Richard Rhodes invented a hearing aid called the audiophone. 1897, the first Frontier Days rodeo celebration took place in Cheyenne, Wyoming. 1905, the Mbunga siege of Fort Mahinga in German East Africa is broken. 1908, the University of Alberta opens. 1912, the first Max Sennett Keystone comedy movie was released. It's called Cohen Collects a Debt. Little did we know, the Keystone Cops would eventually go into roofing business. 1913, Roland Garros is the first to fly over the Mediterranean Sea. Also in 1913, Serbian troops march into Albania. Also that same year, women protests take place in the Free State of South Africa, led by Charlotte Maxeke, resisting government attempts to impose passes on women. Women had to have passes to go anyplace. They burnt the passes in front of the municipal offices. 1920, Alexander Millerand was elected president of France. In 1920, despite Japanese protests, China withdraws recognition of Tsarist representatives in China. Well, let's see. In 1932, Abdulaziz ibn Saud merges the kingdom of Najd and Hejaz into the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. He was actually considered the founder of Saudi Arabia. It was on this day in 1938 that the British Premier Neville Chamberlain flew to Munich to try to reason with Hitler. Came back to announce formally, "We have peace in our time." Until the next year. In 1941, General de Gaulle forms his government in exile in London. 1941, the German air raid on the Soviet naval base at Kronstadt. The battleship Murat is sunk. Also on this date, 1941, the first gas murder experiments are conducted at Auschwitz concentration camp. 1942, the Soviets have a counteroffensive at Stalingrad. In 1944, Proclamation 30 was issued declaring the existence of a state of war between the Philippines, the United States, and the United Kingdom. On this day in 1949, President Harry Truman announced evidence of the USSR's first nuclear device detonation. He was the 33rd President of the United States. In 1950, Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to Ralph Bunche. He mediated in Israel. He was the first African-American winner. In 1952 was the first closed-circuit pay TV telecast of a sport event. Also in 52, Richard Nixon made his Checkers speech. Let's see. In 1955, an all-white jury found Roy Brandt and John William Milam not guilty of the brutal murder of a black teenager, Emmett Till, in Sumner, Mississippi. It's a landmark case that would help inspire the civil rights movement in the U.S. In 1957, on this date, a white mob forces 9 black students enrolled at the Little Rock Central High School in Arkansas to withdraw. The 101st Airborne Division was sent in to escort the 9 students into the school. They were ordered to do that by President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Well, hate it when my computer decides to go off and do its own thing, taking my notes with it. In 1958, Great Britain performed an atmospheric nuclear test at Christmas Island. 58, the U.S. performed a nuclear test at the Nevada test site. And supposedly, a Hollywood film company, which included star John Wayne, was within the affected area that supposedly led to Wayne's cancer. And in 1962, ABC's first color TV series, The Jetsons by Hanna-Barbera, was first broadcast. You know, we've been talking about Ghost of the Old West for some time. And it's interesting to note that there are many who believe that hunting for ghosts is a good profession. Now, ghost stories have captivated us for as long as there have been people to tell the stories to. There are tales of things that go bump in the night. They're used as entertainment, cautionary tales, education, and a way to just have a good old-fashioned scare. But now the question becomes, where does the fiction end and the facts begin? There's really no way to tell. Maybe that's why people are so captivated by stories of the paranormal. The line between what's real and what's invented to create a good ghost story becomes blurred. It's almost impossible to separate the two. Now, for a topic so widely discussed and has such a huge presence in our daily lives as the paranormal, there's almost no hard evidence to support the actual existence of these supernatural forces. Now, when you discuss the paranormal, you're talking about more than just ghosts. Now, while spirits and entities inhabit one major area of the paranormal, that's not the only one. The prefix para actually means alongside, near, resembling, or apart from. So paranormal phenomena, then, are things that are as close to what we consider normal that aren't quite normal or easy to explain. Aliens, by that I mean extraterrestrial beings from places other than Earth, and unidentified flying objects make up another main area of study for those that style themselves paranormal investigators. In fact, more people believe life exists on other planets than believe in ghosts. 2019 YouGov poll, 45% of Americans surveyed said they believed in ghosts. 46% said they believe in other supernatural beings. And a 2019 Gallup poll reported that 49% of Americans believe there are people somewhere like ourselves on other planets. And 75% of respondents said they believe that life of some form exists on places other than the Earth. And that's not the only type of paranormal creature that people believe in. How about cryptids? By that I mean animals whose presence on Earth is unproven are also fascinating to talk about. And there are many who believe it's possible that creatures like Bigfoot, the Yeti, Sasquatch, the Loch Ness Monster, they're all real. Some people say that Nessie is the ghost of a dinosaur. But that's another topic of discussion. You know, one of the oldest ghost stories dates back to ancient Egypt. Though the pyramids, which we have discovered are even older than we thought, are older than most ghost stories. You know, beyond creatures and aliens and other areas of paranormal include the enhanced powers of the mind, like divination, the ability to predict the future, extraterrestrial perception, the ability to read minds or pick up energy, and telekinesis, the ability to move things with using only your mind. Now, curiously, this is the supernatural phenomenon that's generally least believed, but can actually be proven the most and is most closely studied by scientists like Dr. Dean Radinus, a parapsychologist who studies what's called PSI, or psychic phenomena. There's a lot of books to be found talking about this area of study. And despite being the supernatural phenomena most easily studied, measured, and observed, psychic abilities are consistently discounted, even by people who strongly believe in ghosts and aliens. Perhaps this is because when it comes to the supernatural, people would rather have fewer concrete answers. Is the unknowable nature of the paranormal part of its appeal? Perhaps so. There are scientific tests that can measure PSI, but there are none that can categorically prove that ghosts exist. Even the catchy little machines that ghost hunters brag about and point to can be influenced by electrical phenomena. As much as paranormal investigators gather evidence and often rely on equipment to take the most scientific, evidence-based approach possible, their methods don't have a set of standards to measure against, the same way parapsychological studies do. But that hadn't stopped folks from trying to find evidence of a ghost. It's been happening since the beginning of recorded history. Even the most ancient civilizations had stories about ghosts. For thousands of years, people have tried to explain what ghosts are, why they exist, how they stay behind, and reasons they might have for doing so. Ancient Egyptians believed so strongly in the afterlife and in the perseverance of the soul after the death of the body, they relied on rituals in the Book of the Dead to help souls reach the afterlife successfully. In fact, one of the earliest recorded ghost stories dates back to ancient Egypt, about 1200 BC. In the early 20th century, four pottery shards were found that tell the story of a ghost of a mummified man talking to a high priest of the Egyptian god Amun about what it's like to be a ghost. According to a 1915 translation by Egyptologist Gaston Maspero, who used to be the director of antiquities in Egypt, I grew and I didn't see the rays of the sun. I didn't breathe the air, but darkness was before me every day, and no one came to find me. Just a few centuries later, legends of Dubo, an ancient Chinese ghost, came to be. In life, Dubo was a minister to Emperor Huan Wang, who lived from 827 to 782 B.C., according to legend, the emperor had Dubo killed around 785 over BC over a disagreement, despite the fact that Dubo had warned Wan and he would come back and haunt the powerful man. And he did more than haunt the emperor. Chinese philosopher Mozi, who lived from 470 to 391 BC, wrote that Wan was killed with an arrow fired by an apparition resembling Dubo, who in front of an assembly of feudal lords. Now, ancient Greeks and Romans often told ghost stories and philosophized as to what those ghosts might be and why they might haunt the living. Usually, they believed ghosts were the spirits of innocent people who were murdered and whose souls stayed behind in that place, but many times the ghosts were people who sought revenge in life and didn't find rest in death. Greek philosopher Plutarch, who lived in the first century A.D., wrote of a boy named Damon in the town of Chaeronea who killed a Roman military commander and some soldiers for making unwanted advances and then killed a group of city councilmen who condemned him to death. Eventually, Damon was killed in a bathhouse and the townspeople reported strange noises and apparitions in that space long after. You know, ghosts are often believed to haunt old buildings. Some of them even lacking their heads. Seances are quite popular in the late 19th and early 20th century to allow people to communicate with the dead. You know, Plutarch's writings figured heavily in the prophecies of Nostradamus, a 16th century French seer whose predictions about everything from the death of royals in his time to the end of the modern world, which he said would happen in 3797, are still read and studied today. As records became easier to create and preserve, legends of ghosts and hauntings became more prevalent in recorded history. The Tower of London, for example, built in the 11th century A.D., is full of ghost stories because of its bloody past as a place where prisoners were held and many times where they were executed. One of its most famous reported ghosts is Anne Boleyn, the second wife of Henry VIII. She was beheaded on the order of the king and was rumored to appear, sometimes without her head, in the Tower's corridors and at her childhood home, Hever Castle. In Victorian England and in America around the same time, it became fashionable to not just see ghosts, but to try to contact them. People would host seances in their homes to attempt to speak to the dead. In 1860s, Mary Todd Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln's wife, reportedly held 8 seances in the White House Red Room and to attempt to reach her young son, William and Edward, who had passed away. The president himself actually attended a couple of them. The first Ouija boards appeared in 1891, advertised as a way to contact the spirit realm and as a link between the known and the unknown worlds. In fact, in one of the earliest paranormal investigations, British researcher Harry Price studied Borley Rectory in Essex, England for decades. From 1937 to 1938, he even lived in that place, describing it as deeply haunted. Because of his books about the house, like the most haunted houses in England, Price is a pioneer in paranormal investigation. He also wrote an instruction manual for the team of students that he directed when researching the house. He's considered the first person to make the idea of ghost hunting acceptable to the general public. Now, pioneers in modern paranormal investigation, such as John Keel and Hans Holzer, I never met Keel, but I met Hans Holzer, started publicizing their findings on the supernatural in works like Keel's 1975 The Mothman Prophecies and Holzer's 1963 Ghost Hunters. Psychic Sylvia Brown, before she became discredited, would fill theaters around that same time with rapt audiences wanting to hear her predictions. Now, as real ghost stories, like the events that inspired the Amityville Horror and the Poltergeist became more prevalent in pop culture, the public appetite for paranormal investigation increased unbelievably. Today, about 1 in 3 Americans believe that they made some kind of contact with the dead, according to a study by the Pew Research Center in 2015, and 1 in 5 claimed to have actually seen a ghost. Now, the first time people saw real paranormal investigations on TV was Ghost Hunters, premiered on what was then the Sci-Fi Channel in 2004. Both Amy Bruni and Adam Berry got their start as professional ghost hunters on that show, and they were part of creating the modern popularity of paranormal investigation that's so big now. On their show, Kindred Spirits, they've evolved their investigative techniques to focus on helping both the living and the dead find peace. Well, no matter what you believe, it's important to separate fact from fiction when dealing with the supernatural, and to inform yourself using as many resources as possible before you dive into a journey into the unknown. Well, most of the ghost hunters talk about compiling evidence, and there are 5 common types of evidence that they refer to. Now, there are countless ways that the supernatural activity can manifest, but the most common reoccur during many paranormal investigations. The first, and what everybody longs for, is an electronic voice phenomenon known as EVP. And these are recordings of otherworldly voices. In general, it's much easier to hear spirit communication through an audio recording than with the human ear. Sometimes you don't hear anything, but when you play back your recording, you hear the responses. Then there are knocks and creaks and noises. Many ghosts can knock or make other noises on wood or floors. And of course, we have the very spooky moving objects. Spirits have been known to move furniture, even throw objects as a warning or to try to get somebody's attention. And then we have shadow figures, or shadow people. Entities will show up on video as shadows that look just like a disruption of energy, not a fully formed figure by any means. And then, of course, there are temperature changes. You may have one or all or sometimes none. And if you're, you know, one of the least understood entities that are generally encountered are shadow figures. Sometimes it's a slight motion glimpse just out the corner of the eye. A dark blur that comes and goes so quickly it's almost imperceptible. And that's one of the most common ways in which shadow figures make themselves known to us. Though these fascinating creatures can take on almost any size and shape, appears virtually any time or in any place. They're a fixture in folklore and mythologies around the globe. Shadow figures have long occupied the cultural imagination of many cultures. These spirits have been characterized not only as ghosts, but also as interdimensional beings or even aliens. There's some harrowing tales that attach fairly sinister attributes to the mysterious manifestations. There have been reports of people waking after feeling pressure on their chest or experiencing partial paralysis under the grips of a shadowy figure in the corner of the room. Most often they believe this shadowy figure is stealing the breath from their bodies. One incarnation that I've read about a good bit is known as the Hat Man. I've talked to a number of people who actually encountered it. In fact, multiple generations of the same family did. Though they referred to him as the Fedora Man. And this has gained significant notoriety over the last 10 or so years, turning up in many a nightmare. For the most part, the shadowy figures that a lot of investigators have encountered during many years haven't been quite that unsettling, except perhaps for the one that grabbed one of the investigators during an investigation at the National Homestead at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. One theory behind the idea of shadow figures are partial manifestations of energy as opposed to a full-body apparition. And maybe it's just easier for them to come through like that. But while no one is really sure what's causing them, there's apparitions that have come through many, many times over the years. One investigator said shadow figures are probably reported more than anything else, and they can be any number of things. Sometimes they appear human-like. Other times they appear large, like hugely tall. Sometimes they appear like they're slithering on the ground. There are many different versions of shadow figures. Some of them seem to interact. And some of them seem like they don't even know that you're there. They're existing on their own plane. Sometimes they're just standing in front of you. Sometimes they're moving very quickly. Sometimes they move at a normal pace. Sometimes you see them out of the corner of your eye, and sometimes you see them straight on. Sometimes they look like they could be wearing a hat, or you might even see a dress, and then other times it looks like a giant blob in front of you and it doesn't move. Doesn't look like it's in human form, but it's still odd. Sometimes there have been places such as Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky, where they say this shadow figure looks like something crouched down in the side of the hallway. When it knows you've seen it, it stands up and runs at you. But they don't really seem to have enough of a solid figure to make an impact. Then we have the egregores. Unlike most paranormal beings, these entities have nothing to do with spirits of the dead. According to some investigators, when they enter a haunted place, they endeavor to build trust with the spirits who abide there, even though sometimes those spaces can be quite fearsome and intimidating. It's precisely these sorts of frightening locations where visitors typically feel overcome by sadness, alarm, and worry, where the egregores most likely appear. You're born of whatever the dominant emotion in the place might be, according to Amy Bruni, a ghost hunter, I guess you could say. Unlike ghosts, egregores have never existed in human form. Rather, they're believed to be manifestations of negative energy that have been allowed to build up in one area over time. According to Adam Berry and Amy Bruni, they discovered one such creature at Liberty, Missouri's Belvoir Winery and Inn, which formerly was part of a compound of buildings operated by a secret fraternal order known as the Oddfellows. The property included an orphanage, a hospital, a morgue, but the winery is far from the only place where they encountered one of these entities. More recently, the paranormal investigators are called out to the Oliver Estate. That's a historic site in Middleborough, Massachusetts, once owned by Judge Peter Oliver, one of colonial America's first industrial entrepreneurs. And they were asked to deal with an unwanted, menacing supernatural presence. To do this, the two investigators took a page from the 1972 Philip Experiment, a legendary parapsychology study undertaken by University lecturer Dr. George Owen to test his theory that while ghosts are objectively real, they can be created out of the minds of those that see them. You know, the mind is unbelievably powerful. In that study, 8 participants invented a historical character and then attempted to summon that persona. Remarkably, they all seemed to be able to interact with him. Not only that, but when the spirits were asked about his various traits, his answers matched up with the details the group created. It's said to be a reminder that be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. You know, quite often, as part of the atmosphere when you go into a haunted location, and I've run into this myself, you hear the sound of breathing or speaking that comes out of nowhere. A disembodied voice, so to speak. I remember back when I was doing my show on KHRO, and I had a ghost hunting group. They invited me to go to the location they were going to investigate that night. And it was Asarco, the oldest smelter in Texas, where a lot of strange things have happened. In fact, even the security force ran into things that they just couldn't believe. They can, even though the smelter's been shut down for years and it was guarded at that time by a small security force, on one evening as they were making their rounds by Jeep, they came across a team coming back from working their shift at the smelter. Before they could get turned around and try to apprehend whoever it was, the walking figures had disappeared. Now, there was a lot of slag, as it's called, that had been dumped at the smelter that was going to be processed for its value, the elements that were in it. And there were mounds of it. Well, there was a lot of, as they used to be called, hobos, would approach, they would ride the trains. But wherever the trains would stop, there would be what's known as railroad bulls or security that would search for them. So they would jump off the trains before they got there. And since West Texas can get rather cool at night, they would find places in the slag where the heat was still radiating, and they would get some sleep before catching a train the next morning. But if the next train load of slag came in, they didn't check before they dumped it. They just dumped it. So nobody has any idea how many remains of those who died being buried in slag are going to be found when all the slag is finally done away with. It's said there's so much gold and silver in that slag that if it was all processed, it could wipe out the national debt. Maybe that's true. But going back to disembodied voices, when you hear that, it does make your skin crawl. But it's basically, if you're going to be a ghost hunter, an occupational hazard. I sat in one building at Asarco, and after a while, I heard machines running, people talking, the sound of people walking on the concrete floor, but there was nobody there but me. And even if you're an experienced ghost hunter, doesn't mean you're immune from being unsettled by the paranormal manifestations that you might encounter. I mean, let's face it, hearing a disembodied voice or a sigh or a sound or even a simple phrase when there's nobody there to say it is one thing that can unnerve the individual with the strongest of nerves. It's the strangest, weirdest type of activity, according to Amy Bruni. Your body knows that physically that's wrong. You're hearing a voice and there's nobody there, but it's coming from where somebody would be. It's in the right place, but there's no body attached to it. There have been all manner of disembodied voices heard in some of the most frightening places you'd ever think. During the investigation of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Western West Virginia, it became renamed the Western Hospital before it was shut down in 1994. Investigators heard not only a male voice that came out of nowhere, but the sound of a chair in the next room being dragged across the floor. I mean, let's face it, disembodied voices are weird. And the creepiest is when they happen right near you because they come out of thin air. According to Adam Berry, who's one of the investigators, the craziest one he'd ever experienced was he was standing with a group of people at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. They were at an event and they were just wrapping up an entire night of investigating. And he was telling the participants the basics. Review your evidence. Let's see if we captured anything. And all of a sudden, he heard what sounded like muffled mumbling of a man right next to him. He looked to his right to see who was talking, and there's nobody there. But it was coming from an area where a mouse should be. He registered that it's a disembodied voice, and then turned back and looked at the people in the room. Their jaws were just hitting the floor. They're staring at him like, did that just happen? Well, with an EVP, you don't hear it when it happens. You only hear it when you play back your recording, as I said before. And you never know what you're going to find. You know, people who aren't deeply invested in the ghost hunting tend to think a ghost is a ghost is a ghost. They're all the same. They should be dealt with the same way. But according to most ghost hunters, that couldn't be further from the truth. Just like every living person is different and needs an individualized method of communication, every ghost needs a unique approach as well. And there's so many different kinds of ghosts out there and many methods of communication to reach them. Depending on the kind of activity and how the evidence presents itself, you might use anything from a hand recorder to a sophisticated camera that track the energy patterns in the space to make and record contact. No matter what happens or what they observe, one thing remains true. You need to talk to the ghost with respect, just like you'd give to a living person. Now, ghosts may seem scary, but they're not trying to scare you, normally. Sometimes, depending on the kind of entity you've run into, it could be there just to frighten or provoke you, but in actuality, according to most ghost hunters I've talked with, that's a rare phenomenon. Most ghostly paranormal activity comes from what are known as active haunts. Opinion by most ghost hunters dictates that there are spirits of people who passed away but still have some kind of presence in the world of living. Nearly every active haunt that is reported is a benign spirit that's consciously or unconsciously making contact with living people. Sometimes ghosts stay behind to watch over relatives or loved ones or to make sure they're safe and protected. In instances like that, spirits might try to reach out, not just by appearing if they can, but by knocking on walls or moving objects or even speaking out loud to convey a message. Sometimes ghosts connect with a place rather than with a person. That could be a home they lived in the past or a place they have a strong emotional attachment to, whether that attachment be positive or negative. One case that was investigated was where it seemed that there was a menacing activity in the home of a young couple that they were renovating. But it was actually the spirit of the man who'd built the house trying to protect the house from what he saw as improper modifications. He didn't understand the new homeowners taking good care of his house and not causing harm by knocking walls down. They also investigated old prisons where inmates have chosen to stay behind after death because they feel they still deserve to be incarcerated. As I said, the human mind can be a very powerful source of things like this. In other cases, ghosts stay behind because they don't know where else to go. At an inn on Cape Cod, investigators made contact with the spirit of Wilhelmina Crocker, who lived next door. She had died suddenly in a car accident over 100 years before. Stayed behind in the building because she didn't realize she was dead. And certainly didn't know she could leave. When the ghost hunter showed the woman a copy of her death certificate, the last thing they heard was an EVP of her saying, "I'm going home." Then there was silence. And while most spirits are benign and harmless, there are the rare instances when an entity can be slightly more problematic, or at least people believe they are. One of the most commonly used terms in regard to a troublesome spirit is poltergeist. That's German for noisy spirit. That's a concept dating back over 1,000 years. Term used to describe a spirit that causes major disturbances in a particular area. Poltergeists have been known to hit and scratch people, have moved furniture in drastic, sometimes frightening ways. First recorded account of a poltergeist was in 856 A.D., when a family that lived in a farmhouse in Germany reported being menaced by an unseen force and would throw stones and start fires. Poltergeists tend to manifest in places where there's already intense energy or unrest. Specifically, they're known to appear in houses where there's their adolescents going through their tumultuous preteen and early teenage years, when hormones and emotions run unusually high. In fact, the movie Poltergeist is usually based on activity reported by a Long Island, New York family in 1958. In this story, a couple with a 12-year-old son and teenage daughter reported objects being thrown around their house and even more frightening occurrences. All in all, they recorded about 70 unexplained phenomena, eventually becoming a national sensation after being featured in a Life magazine article in 1958. They also attracted the attention of Dr. Joseph Pratt from Duke University's parapsychology lab. Came to investigate what was happening. He wasn't able to prove definitively, but he believed a menacing poltergeist could have been attracted to the house because of the youngsters. The distinction between a poltergeist and a regular ghost isn't always clear, especially if you're on the receiving end. Or it's not always necessary. What Germans call a noisy ghost can be called a nuisance. I mean, after all, what's in a name? If you want to call every ghost you encounter that makes banging sounds or moves objects a poltergeist, then fine. But it would probably classify it differently as a human spirit that's trying to get our attention, who needs something, who's doing something to freak us out because it doesn't want us in their space, according to one ghost hunter. Another type of entity that can be problematic is an egregore, manifest for inverse reasons from a poltergeist. Other than a spirit that's attracted to the tumultuous energy of a space, an egregore is created from that energy. People believe a space is haunted. It attracts visitors intent on seeing ghosts who over and over add psychic energy to the place, in their belief that they'll find something supernatural there. That energy can eventually create a thought form. It can respond like a ghost would, but there's quite a bit, few more troublesome characteristics. Well, you know that feeling when you walk into a room and you know a tense exchange just happened there? You didn't see anything happen, but you can tell that something just went on. That's an energetic imprint. The stronger the emotional impact, the bigger the energetic imprint left behind. That's what creates a residual haunt. When something very intense happens in a space, like a murder or some other kind of traumatic death, it can leave enough energy behind. It creates a situation where a version of a spirit exists on a loop. They recreate the same actions at the same moment over and over again. Think of it like a song communication that just plays on repeat. Because they don't respond to communication from the living, the common thinking is that residual haunts don't have consciousness and aren't aware of what's happening around them or even to them. It's more like a manifestation of a memory that just keeps popping up again and again. Well, then you have an intelligent haunt. Now, the vast majority of cases that most ghost hunters work on involve intelligent haunts. These are spirits who are conscious of what's happening around them and active participants in situations. There have been cases investigated where intelligent haunts are doing anything from watching over loved ones to trying to protect people from perceived danger in a place that like an old mine where there was once a terrible accident. In some cases, like one at a private home in Rhode Island, an intelligent hawk can be just going about his own daily business in the house he lived in and loved for decades. In that particular case, it turned out that all the moving furniture and surfaces that were knocked on were just the previous homeowner living his best afterlife in what he still thought of as his house. If you live in a house that is occupied by a ghost, they don't like change. Sometimes a house that people have lived in for decades can suddenly have manifestations of haunting because the spirits aren't happy at something the people living in it now have done. Well, there are many, many stories of encounters of one type or another. Whenever there's a haunting reported, there's a good chance the phenomena includes phantom footfalls or footsteps. Now, most paranormal enthusiasts are no doubt familiar with the stone tape theory. Now, that concept dates back to the 19th century, essentially argues that ghosts are unlike recordings that replay over and over. So if a person habitually performed an action in life, like walking along a certain route, that activity continues even after his death. The spirit is simply reenacting something strongly imprinted on its psyche. At historic Fort Knox in Prospect, Maine, for example, troops once garrisoned there can still be heard marching in formation as they did when they were alive. We've got a similar situation in El Paso at Concordia Cemetery. That used to be one of the incarnations of Fort Bliss, when it was a cavalry post, and you can hear the horses moving in unison and the sounds of people. You know, footsteps are one of the most frequently reported examples of this sort of residual activity. And also, although most ghost hunters say that although they've encountered virtually every kind of ghostly manifestation, nearly all the cases have one thing in common. People report hearing footsteps. It's a residual sound a lot of time, but still, it manifests itself as footsteps. And although hearing otherworldly footsteps might not be that unusual for those who come in contact with the spirit realm, there's almost no limit to the type of footsteps that witnesses have heard or to the locations where they've been recorded. Well, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, we'll be talking about ghostly manifestations. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.